So this morning, we're going to talk about how it is that Jesus builds his church. And to be honest, it's probably not what you might expect, but Jesus' plan for building his church is something that you are challenged to engage in all the time. This fall, we're in a sermon series called Rediscover Church. I think we need to rediscover what Jesus has called churches to be. Because I'm convinced that, you know, there are people who go to church all the time, and they take it for granted. Because when you're in services like this, it becomes easy to forget about the grandness, beauty, and power of what we are as we gather. And we're better off for learning about this. I'm also convinced that there are other folks who don't go to church for a variety of reasons, and they've written off church altogether as broken, useless, or completely outdated. But here's the thing. Jesus claims that he is building his church and that evil cannot overcome it. Now, so far, just to give you some reference, so far, most of the series has gone like this. Most people think that the church is a building or an organization or a pastor or an experience. We think the church is a, here's a church, here's a steeple, like we teach the kids, right? But nope, church is what? The people, right? Together, everyone remember that one? Jesus is building people, and Christianity is global, it is historic, and it is a massive group of people. We've talked all about it. Today, though, we're going to discover exactly how Jesus builds his church. How does he do it? How is Jesus building his people? Now, let me just point out, as soon as you say a phrase like church building, there's a group of people who lean in and love talking about it. These people are usually pastors or church leaders. And every year, there are thousands of books, podcasts, articles, just putting out methods to answer that question. The latest polls, research, trends, ideas, how to build a bigger audience, basically. And there are lots of ideas, different kinds of coffee to serve, different kinds of music to play, more comfortable seats to get, lots of information. The thing is, most non-church leader people don't really care about that kind of thing. And most conferences are asking the wrong questions. Let me just rephrase it. If it's true, like if a church is people, then growing a church is, I mean, you could figure this out, right? It really should be about growing people. So here's the question we're asking today. How does Jesus build people? Now this is a question everybody's asking. This isn't just a church question. This is a people question. People flourishing, being successful, growing, changing, maturing. Most people are obsessed with this. The books lasting the longest on the New York Times bestseller list are about this topic. Trending social media posts, popular radio programs, all answer that question, how do I become the best version of myself? How do I become better performing? How do I help my kids be better? How do I help my marriage? How do I help my family? How do I help my career? Or how do I help the most vulnerable around me? Like, this isn't a church question. This is a question everybody asks. And if a church is people, building a church should make people who are part of the church better. Like, that's what we're talking about today. Being part of a church should make you flourish, be more productive, and better off, which is a very different shift of how most people think about church building. And I think maybe that's because there are too many institutional churches that put the organization before the people, and that isn't healthy. So let me just, without any more introduction, let me just tell you God's plan. What is Jesus doing to build people? I'm not going to tease out any longer. I'm just going to open the answer key here because Paul just tells us raw and straight up in the book of Ephesians. If you were here in this spring, this might be a review for you, but in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 14 and 15 and 16, the Bible just throws it out there exactly how he builds his church. Here's what it says. Then I guess I should back up, because you go, what's it then, therefore? If you read verses 12 and 13, there's this long list, pastors and church leaders equip God's people for gifts of service. Then, it says, you'll no longer be infants, being tossed back and forth by the waves. You'll no longer be blown here and there by every wind of teaching and by the cunning and craftiness of people and their deceitful schemes. Well, then what? What does it look like? Instead, Paul says, so instead of being rocked back and forth, instead of being unstable or immature or being rocked around, instead, here it is, speaking the truth in love. Speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of him who is the head, that is Christ. From Christ, the whole body, joined and held together by every supporting ligament, grows and builds itself up in love as each part does its work. That's the plan. Let me unpack it. Like, you see some of these words, right? This is a passage about the whole body connected to the head, Christ. The church is people being connected both to Christ and to each other, being built up. This is Jesus's strategy for church growth. And it's not about attendance or influence. It is about taking people who are unstable and immature and bringing them to maturity. You'll see phrases like, no longer infants, like no longer immature, no longer in turmoil, no longer retreating into despair, but advancing in courage. This is a passage about building a life and building a community on a firm foundation that is stable in bad times. So you see the word mature, like it's this progression from immaturity to being like, well, like Jesus, going from isolation to community, being part of a body. You see this, the word ligament, like it's an anatomy term that means connection, that we're all connected. It's what we met last week when we said that people were never meant to be independent, we said last week. We were designed to be dependent on God and for interdependence with others. Today, though, is about a simple question. How do we do that? Or how does Jesus do that, maybe I should ask? Is there a program or an app or maybe something mysterious that God does? Like, how does Jesus do this? And Paul answers that question with one of these phrases that can change your life. Here's what Jesus is doing. Well, it's people speaking the truth in love. People speaking the truth in love. That's how we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of him who is the head, that is Christ. Like, that's it. That's the secret to personal growth. If you want to grow, find people around you who are close to Jesus, have them talk to you honestly and lovingly, and then speak the truth to other people lovingly, and listen to them. Take good advice from wise people who know all your blind spots, and you got to be honest with them, the good and the bad. A church should be, maybe it should feel a little bit like a group of coaches. Christians should run their race like well-coached athletes. It's like anybody else watching professional sports now. Philadelphia fans are like very happy right now, right? But if you watch any kind of professional sport, the highest performing athletes in the world, they're not isolated. They've got a giant support staff. Like, it's actually like crazy how many people athletes employ. Like, they've got business coaches, marketing people, literally, like, every part of their game and anatomy has a staff member, right? They've got a nutrition coach. Like, you may be led to believe, based on commercials, that athletes are experts in diets or insurance, but they're not. They've got lots of people behind them. I'm not positive, but I suspect in the event that Tom Brady ever gets close to a real Subway sandwich, he's got someone who's paid to like slap it out of his hands to put the thing down, right? Like that's just how it works. Here's my theory. I think Kyler Murray pays somebody just to follow him around and tell him to stop playing Xbox, right? And you see it. If you watch a game, whenever a single player goes down, they're not by himself, right? There's a whole crowd of people around them. It's just medical staff, not counting players, right? And the best players don't hold anything back. They pay people to watch their tape to say, hey, you're running a little bit strange. Watch your knee. Like, they have a whole staff to make them high performing. The best athletes in the world aren't the ones who say, hey, I'm really talented, I'm really good at this, leave me alone. They're the ones who surround themselves with coaches, and they're humble enough to accept advice, help, and instruction, and take all the support they have around them. You know, most of us are nothing like top athletes for lots of reasons, but one of them is that we think we can run our race by ourselves. Don't tell me how to stretch. I've always done it this way, right? And we run our spiritual race wondering why we aren't performing well. Or we hurt ourselves and we don't know why. Or here's the thing. Jesus' design for you, running your spiritual race, will change your life. His plan is to give you a coaching staff, and he calls the coaching staff church. You know what church is? People who surround you and make you a better person by, you know how they do it? Speaking the truth in love. You know what that means, right? There's all the tension of brutal honesty, right? Like, here's a fact. If you're talking to Arizona Cardinals quarterback Kyler Murray, someone needs to tell him to stop playing Xbox, right? Here's a hard conversation. You're falling apart on the field. Watch some tape. That's awkward. Any good coaching relationship, there's the difficulty of truth. Like, I'm not making fun of you, man. I want you to be the best quarterback you can be. And based on the tape, here's what you need to change. Like, those are hard, right? What you want to say is, good job, man, you're doing great. But the best athletes in the world listen to hard conversations. And to be clear, I'm not a fan of Kyler Murray. I am making fun of him. But he needs people who actually love him enough to tell him the truth. Because that's how you get better. Like, can you imagine how much better you might do as an athlete if you had a professional group of coaches to make you the best version of yourself? Like that, to be honest, that's what God designed church to be. If you missed it, look around. Seriously, look around the room for a second. You're not alone here. Look around. Those people sitting next to you are called by God to be your biggest coaches and support. In fact, let's just have some fun with this. Take a minute out loud, tell someone next to you, good morning, coach. Do it, seriously, I'm not even kidding. Good morning, okay, you got the hang of it, that's great. There we go. The people sitting around you should support you to make you the best follower of Christ that you can be. That's how it should be. Let's just be honest here. Let's speak the truth in love. Most church experiences are nothing like that. And maybe it's because, to hop up a couple verses in Ephesians, pastors have done a bad job equipping people for works of service. It only works if people love each other and are honest and are vulnerable and ask for accountability. And it doesn't normally work because not enough people show up in a group like this willing to accept coaching. So today's message is about getting some coaching. And this is not a sermon by me, it's a sermon by Moses. And I'm going to give you some words from Leviticus 19. And this is what Moses says in a sermon to help you speak the truth in love. A bunch of do nots. Do not pervert justice. Do not show partiality to the poor or favoritism to the great. But here's what you do. Judge your neighbor fairly. Do not go about spreading slander among your people. Do not do anything that endangers your neighbor's life, for I am the Lord. Do not hate a fellow Israelite in your heart. Rebuke your neighbor frankly so that you do not share in their guilt. Do not seek revenge or bear a grudge against anyone among your people, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. Let me just start where Moses' sermon ends. Speaking the truth in love sounds an awful lot like the first and second great commandment of Christ. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself, Jesus says, right? You notice in this short passage in Leviticus, twice, Jesus reminds people, or God reminds people, that I am the Lord your God. One of my professors, Paul David Tripp, says, and you're hearing a lot of him today, says that from God's perspective, the reason why we speak the truth in love to each other, the reason why we rebuke our neighbor frankly, is because we love and worship the Lord and we want to obey him. That's where it all starts. He says that when we don't do that, when we don't speak the truth in love, even though God tells us to do, it must be because there's something that we value more than the Lord. Maybe we don't want to risk the relationship with a person we need to talk to. Maybe we somehow want to avoid complications. Maybe we just love peace and respect and appreciation more than we love the Lord. And he says, if we really love God and love our neighbors, we're going to do exactly what God's called us to do, speak the truth in love. Now, Ephesians, of course, is about what we should do. Leviticus is about what not to do. Don't show partiality, right? Care about everybody. Don't spread slander, it says. Speak the truth in love to the people that need to hear it, not all the people that are just interested. Don't spread stuff to everybody. Don't put people in danger, like protect people. Don't hate people, even if it's just in the privacy of your own heart. And then it centers about what to do. Rebuke your neighbor frankly. Do not bear a grudge against anyone. Love your neighbor as yourself. To be honest, we could spend some time unpacking all of these, and it'd be really easy to find examples in our culture, our world, and our community of how we failed to live up to this. We could talk about the rhetoric in our country, to the slander in our town. We have not lived up to what God has commanded us to do. And it is all rooted in this simple fact, I am the Lord. Church always starts with the gospel. We love because he loved us first. And 1 John teaches us that the most reliable indicator of our love for God is the way that we treat other people. And let's just speak the truth in love for a minute. The reason why churches are seldom associated with how Ephesians describes them is because too many people claim to follow the Lord, but they don't love God enough, or they don't really see him as the Lord enough to do what he's commanded. Like, here's a hard truth. Our willingness to gossip, to live in anger, to trim the truth, to ignore massive problems, it shows something deeper than our failure to just say things. According to Leviticus, it is linked to a lack of love and worship for God himself. That's hard, right? And let me just clarify, here's where it gets confused. I think sometimes being nice and being loving are very different things. In our culture, values being nice more than I think being loving, right? Like we all want to tell the athlete, you're doing great, you're doing wonderful, I love how you're running. We don't like saying, you know what, you got to make some adjustments here so you can go faster. So you know what we all do? We see things and we don't talk about it. And let me be clear, this isn't an encouragement to be super rude or mean, like don't walk away with that. Some of us are actually mean or rude. Like, that's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about being loving and truth-telling. But I think a lot of us, we go, we don't want to be rude. We don't want to hurt the guy's feelings, so I'm not going to say anything. And the Bible teaches that those who love will speak, even if it creates tense, sometimes upsetting moments. Like, if you really love someone and you really want God's best for them, Like, we need to do this. Like, how do we do this? How are we so good at standing by in silence as people wander off and self-destruct? But this is what Christians do. We watch people lie to themselves with excuses, blame, and rationalization, and we shouldn't. If we really care for someone, it's the way we love people isn't idle or silent. It is active. The passage in Leviticus says, rebuke your neighbor frankly, speak the truth in love, Ephesians says. This is a call to respond to those who are around us. And you cannot possibly do this without having good relationships with people. You ever see somebody and you're like, man, I sure hope somebody tells that person what they're doing wrong. They're gonna crash and burn. You ever just hope that someone has someone in their life who can be honest with them and loving? Because if they don't, they're in trouble. Anyone do that? And then you watch nobody talk to them and everything you worry about happens? I wonder if you find yourself going, I sure wish someone would tell them something. Maybe you're that person. That's possible, right? And then here's the one that, like, this is the phrase that keeps me up at night. I don't like this one bit. The passage says, rebuke your neighbor frankly. And then it says the part that I want to cross off, so that you do not share in his guilt. There's a scary implication here. That it's possible to share in the guilt of someone because you have failed to confront them lovingly. It's this idea that communities have moral responsibility. And by the way, you guys know how Jesus defines neighbor, right? Basically anybody around you. Speak the truth in love, or, this is terrifying to me, you may share in their guilt. Like I've used this illustration to elders. Here's the illustration I use. If I'm sitting in the parking lot and if I watch a truck driven by one of you drive by, and I notice all the lug nuts are off on one of your tires, and it's starting to wobble, what do you do then? Well, I'll tell you what I would do. I'd run out, I'd bang on your hood and go, stop driving, your tire's gonna fall off, I don't want you to get hurt, I don't want you to hurt other people, I don't want there to be an accident. Like that. That's what I would do if I saw one of your tires about to fall off while you're driving. If I were to watch that and I were to go, I'm not a mechanic. Like, none of my business. I don't want to interrupt them. They might be in the middle of something. If I see someone about to self-destruct, and if I don't say anything, and their tire falls off, and there's an accident, and people get hurt, aren't I a little bit guilty for that? Why wouldn't I say something? Why don't we say things? Like, imagine all the hurt and damage that could get avoided and rescued if people in your life, if people around you, if in our community, if there was enough love to have this conversation. You know, this is awkward, but I've noticed how much you're drinking. I've noticed how you treat your wife. I noticed I haven't seen you in church. I'm concerned about whatever, and I love you, and you're at risk for hurting yourself and others. Let me help you do things differently. That's how people who love God should treat their neighbors according to the Bible. It's not that I'm not judging you, I'm not looking down on you, it's not that I don't respect you, it's that I just see all the lug nuts on your tires coming off, and I don't want there to be an accident. Speak the truth in love. Paul David Tripp asks, how many sermons have you ever heard on the immorality of self-absorbed silence? I've not heard a single one, right? Have you ever thought about that, though? Like how often you've chosen to be quiet? Maybe God has called you to be part of his brave rescue effort. And Tripp says, we are called to accept moral responsibility for the things God reveals to us about others. And having said that, I want to be clear so we don't take this and run. This isn't a blank check to be someone else's conscience. It doesn't call you to be self-righteous or to be rude or judgmental. This is a neighbor-to-neighbor passage. Like, here's a lie we tell ourselves. We like to think that there's two groups of people. Let me just be clear. Look around. There's not a tier group of athletes and coaches. Some of us think that we're coaches and we're not running because we think that we've arrived and we have the spiritual gift of complaining. That's not real. Like, you stop running your race when you get to heaven. Until then, we're all simultaneously athletes and coaches. We're coaching and simultaneously getting coached. So we all run better our spiritual races. So speak the truth in love is a lifestyle. It shouldn't be an unusual event. Like, here's another problem. There's lots of problems here. Confrontation is so difficult when it's unusual, right? Like, there are some kids for whom the most terrifying words you'll ever hear is, your mother and I need to talk to you. Scary, right? The implication is that your parents don't normally talk to you, right? Maybe they should talk to you more often. Like, this is true. Sometimes correcting conversations are so rare that we mess it up and we make people dread the next time we've got to talk. But from the Bible's perspective, speaking the truth in love in relationship, it always grows in its ability to recognize, confront, and deal with, well, small problems before they become big problems. You know what church is? Church is people. And Jesus' plan to build a church is building people. You know how he builds people? He equips them, speaking the truth in love, listening to the truth in love. God's plan is for you to coach others, to be coached, to run your race to the finish line following the Lord. So I've got two questions for you this week. First one, what coaching tip, what truth do you need to receive in love and humility that may make you more like Jesus this week? You may not know the answer. Maybe someone around you can help you. So here's a question you actually can answer. Who can you make better by lovingly speaking the truth to them this week? So Father in heaven, can you this morning give us the profound insight to see how we can help people around us? Give us the courage and the words to help people. Can you give us the humility to receive loving correction? Can you help us be more like you? No matter at what stage in our spiritual walk or run or race that we find ourselves, can you help us to be filled with your glory as we bow down, as we take off the crowns that represent our pride and our accomplishments? Can you hear our cry? We want to see you glorified. Can you help us to love each other and to speak the truth in love so we can build each other up? I ask all this in the name of our head, Jesus, in whose image we become more and more like. Amen.